And now
it's 10 a.m.
Let's just get down to it.
And it's time for your sports fix.
Strap yourselves in, folks.
From two guys who have covered the teams you're passionate about for years.
We are professionals.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
All aboard!
Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson. Thank you for making us a part of your Tuesday. Big day on the show, Ben. We're going to air the Danny Ainge press conference at the top of the 11 o'clock hour, which should give us enough time to immediately react, which will be nice.
Mr. Elusive, Danny Ainge, what do you expect to hear from Danny today?
I don't know. I could see it going both ways. If it were Dennis Lindsay, I'd know we'd hear a lot of words, but a whole lot of, like, empty coach speak.
A lot of names, not a lot of info. I actually think Danny does say quite a bit. Danny's not hiding as much as people think he is.
That's the
thing. I
don't
think he wants to do any media, but he's not hiding.
No, well, I mean, define hiding, I suppose. But I expect fairly frank answers.
Yeah,
I guess
will tell you the truth.
Is my point. I don't know if I would expect frank answers from Dennis Lindsay, but I expect fairly frank answers from Danny Ainge.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody in the know who knows Danny well and said, yeah, that part of his brain is kind of broken. Not brain, I shouldn't say that. That part of Danny is kind of broken. He will just tell you what is happening. He's not going to play that game. It's not who he is. He doesn't have to anymore. He's got the best job security outside of Pat Riley. And maybe it's as good, if not better, than Pat Riley. Like, he doesn't have to worry about anything. What does Danny Ainge have to worry about? Ryan Smith's not going to fire him. He's going to the Hall of Fame at some point.
Yeah, but he's also not going to come out and put a bunch of people on blast and confess that they're going to try and lose every game next year.
No, he won't do that.
You're not going to hear that sort of thing.
No, he won't say, no, we're Cooper Flagg or bust.
He's still going to be somewhat political, I guess, is my point.
Yeah.
Because he's a general manager, and that's what they...
He manages people.
That's what you do.
Yeah.
It'd be funny if he stood up there and busted out a list and, like, you know, here's a list of people that have disappointed me this year.
Airing of grievances, number one.
It's a long list.
Colin Sexton.
So buckle up, because we're going to get deep and hurt some feelings right now. Yeah, and you're not going to...
Colin Sexton might be the person you can have the fewest grievances about this year. Played as many games as he could, got sick the very last few games of the season, and I think they probably rested him the last game or two. But he played 79 games, had maybe not his best career season statistically. He averaged 24 at one point in Cleveland, but impacted winning probably more than he ever has before. Colin was good this year.
He was good this year, and I liked his and Will Hardy's. The evolution of their relationship I thought was pretty darn interesting. But what if Danny was super frank? Like, yeah, we packed hot dog stuff and mailed it to him because no need to come back.
Yeah.
We wished him luck.
Yeah, right. Good luck. Adios.
Thanks for helping us rack up some mails at the end.
Appreciate you. You served your purpose. I'll be curious where Talen lands. I don't think it'll be with the Jazz next year.
I don't either.
I think he is still in the NBA next season. I think he gets another shot.
Maybe. I wonder about him if he ever evolves his understanding of where he fits in the league. And by the way, that's not a problem just he has. I think that's actually a really common problem in the NBA where players come in and they're used to something and they've got to evolve into something else. And that's a difficult process. But like, if you look at his size, his ability to get to the basket, if used selectively, he's not a bad shooter.
Career high 33% this year.
He hustles. He hustles when he wants to, and which is more often than not. I'm not here to bag on the guy, but like his role in the NBA is never going to be take the ball and go eat. I mean, that's not advantageous to winning basketball. He's just not good enough to play that way. But if he picked his spots a little bit better and found out what his role was going to be on a team, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, playing whatever minutes. But what you can't do is come in and just push everybody out of the way and be like, all right, it's hot dogs time to hot dog up some hoops, because the NBA doesn't work that way, I guess, unless you're James Harden, and even then they didn't get to a title, you know?
And Talen Horton is not James Harden.
Not even close.
Here's the hard part for Talen.
Does he evolve his mentality? I wonder. If he lands, gets another opportunity, does he say, okay, well, I'm going to fill a different role?
Career-high three-point shooting percentage, 33%, which is not good, but it's within the realm of acceptable. And career-high free throw percentage, 0.807. And career-low effective field goal percentage. That's just bizarre, because he was so bad inside the paint. Which is funny. That's kind of what you'd think his strength is getting to the basket. Well, he shot 39% from the floor. He shot 43% on two-point shots. Really bad. Really bad. Now, that could be Jazz spacing. That could be always having somebody in the dunker spot. There's a lot there. Difficulty of shot. He took a lot of really, really hard layups. But he's going to be picked apart pretty good. I mean, he's certainly not making $10 million next year like he did this year.
Well, I think stats... If I were considering signing him, I would not consider stats. Because frankly, after the play hard and pass throwdown, and if you're not gonna play Jazz basketball, you're not gonna play that whole thing. Like, Talen's playing time fell off a cliff. I mean, if you read into that what you will. And every time he got into play there on out, Ben, he was gonna shoot every time he touched the ball. Go back and watch it. Every time he got in, he was getting up. He was going to get double-digit shots in whatever, you know, 6 minutes he played or whatever.
He averaged 9 attempts a game in fewer than 20 minutes. It's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
And so he was getting out there and trying to pack stats, and I would guess that he was getting some bad advice. But we'll see. I mean, I don't want to hate on the guy. He actually had a really good attitude. It just, he didn't listen. I don't think he listened to the coach.
Fourth on the team in field goal attempts per minute. Colin Sexton won, but Colin Sexton had one of the better shooting years of his career. Lauri Markkanen, two. Lauri Markkanen should be one. Jordan Clarkson, three. That's what Jordan Clarkson does. And then Talen, four, ahead of both Keontae George and John Collins.
Well, listen, Colin at times, and to talk about the evolution of the relationship with the coach, Colin at times fell into the same category as Talen did. But Colin fell in line a lot more. Now, he had his relapses too, where he would cut the rest of the team out of the game plan and get a full head of steam. But he seemed to have a better communication on the issue with the coach, because he'd dial it in pretty quick when they'd have a tough loss, or Coach Hardy would have one of those stern post games, and all of a sudden Colin would be back to what made him better. And that's just natural evolution, I would say. But it seemed like he and Coach Hardy had a really good relationship, where it was like, trust me, dial it back a little bit, move it around, this is how we're going to do it, and you're going to look good doing it. And that's what ultimately I think was the theme of his season.
He kind of figured out less is more. Less calling in the right spots is a lot more. It brings more to the team.
You know what? That's a good point. Picked his spots a lot better.
Yeah.
But yeah, you don't want him leading your team in attempts per minute. So
no. Then that'll change. That will continue to evolve and grow. But fine, Colin was good this year. So I'll be curious. Yeah, I mean, the Jazz have, what, 5 free agents coming up this season? We already talked about Talen Horton Tucker. I don't think we'll see Luka Šamanić again, in all honesty. Intriguing body, great athleticism. To this point of
love
shooting.
To shoot.
He's number
yeah.
7 on the team in
I'm
field
sure
goals
he
per
is.
Minute. He was not passing. Certainly, he was not going to be moving that ball very often when he was on the floor. Omer Yurtseven has a non-guaranteed contract next year. I kind of don't think we'll see him back, but I could be wrong on that.
Oh, I'd totally bring that dude back.
He's cheap.
I thought he showed a lot. And he had 18 rebounds in the last game.
There's like enough of that. He's just like a very normal backup center. And you know what? If you replace Omer, you're getting Omer 2.0.
Yeah.
That's the difference. It's like, you might get a different body. It's the same person.
The same dude.
Yeah.
And if you can get him on a low salary, why not? And that's what I want out of my backup center. Go ahead and crack some skulls.
And he was fine not playing. I'm sure he wanted to play, but you never heard. I don't think he went into Will Hardy's office and was like, all right, coach, I got to play now, when he sat for 40 games in a row in the middle of the season. I don't, you know.
He said something about that in a post game. God, was it the second to last game? Maybe it was the last game. He was like, I didn't play forever, so yeah. I got to get in and make it happen. And I thought he did. I thought he was good. I'd consider bringing him back.
I don't think Kyra Lewis Jr. is back. He was involved in the Kelly Olynyk trade. Maybe he'll play the summer league or something like that, but he might just want a fresh start somewhere else with a better opportunity. Johnny Juzang, I think Johnny Juzang's going to get an NBA contract. I don't know if it's with the Jazz or not.
You think he's shown enough?
I think if you're like the Phoenix, these second apron teams that have $1 trillion on their salary, like if I'm taking a flyer on a young guy who can shoot threes at a really high level, I think that's a pretty good investment. Shot 41% from three on 7.5 attempts for 36 minutes. It's a good number. I would take a flyer on him. And there will be enough Milwaukee Bucks, Phoenix Suns, Boston Celtics, those types of teams, Denver Nuggets. Like, that's exactly who I would target. The nice thing for the Jazz in that situation is he's a restricted free agent. So if you want to bring him back, you can bring him back at whatever the lowest cost is. And it may actually scare teams away from even investing in him. Jason Preston's on a two-way deal. He'll be back next season. I think he's going to play summer league with the Jazz. Chris Dunn, I think, is probably a little bit more interesting. Unrestricted free agent. Jazz can't match his rights. Did give him a chance to come back. He has a role here. He fits. And still, I don't know if I'd be, like, married to bringing him back, but I certainly wouldn't put it away.
I think he's been good enough to be a backup point guard somewhere.
I think so, too.
So I would guess he gets signed. I mean,
he's definitely an NBA player.
His shooting is still inconsistent, but give me a dude who can go out there and guard and doesn't turn the ball over hardly at all and is competent when it comes to, you know, where to be on the floor. I think there's value in that. I don't know who his comp would be per se. He can't shoot it well enough to be your starting guard. But I got to guess that guy has 17, 18 minutes in a rotation on a really good team.
He can play on all 30 teams in the NBA. That's a real advantage.
So someone's going to sign him somewhere.
Yeah, again, these second apron teams that would love to sign him to a veteran minimum, I just think he's going to make more than that is the truth. Like, I just don't think you're going to get him for $1.5 million.
And maybe we're up in the night and the shooting thing is just, you know, not going to work in the NBA. But he's been really good at times for the Jazz.
And he's an interesting character. Good character, like a good leader.
In a positive way.
Yeah.
But if the other team doesn't have to guard you, that's rough.
Micah Potter, I'd be surprised if he's back next year.
Yeah.
His two-way contract comes to an end. Like Johnny Juzang, he's a restricted free agent. And then the two players they added late in the season, Darius Bazley and Kenneth Lofton Jr., I would expect both to be in camp next year. They're on non-guaranteed deals. I think Kenneth Lofton has a real chance of making the team.
He's interesting.
He's interesting.
But this is all, you know, back of the roster fringe stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
yeah.
This
started with Talen. And
I don't think any of these are particularly difficult decisions. Like, I mean, I think that Yurtsevin warrants another look. You obviously feel the same way about Kenny Lofton. Would it be some great tragedy to the team if they decided, meh?
Right. You'd be like, oh, okay.
All right. Yeah.
I mean, they almost did with Johnny Juzang. Remember they waived Johnny Juzang?
Yeah.
Early in free agency. I think they actually let him test the market a little bit. And they said, okay, we'll bring you back for another two-way. Like, well, okay, go see if there's something out there for you. And we're happy if you make money somewhere else. And he didn't, and he came back. I could see the Jazz doing that with all these guys.
But, like, I mean, you know, you thin Kenny out. Can he be a unique player in the league? Like an oversized 3-4 wing kind of guy? I don't know if that's possible, but, I mean, I think that's interesting.
Well, again, at this point, I had someone tweet me, and they were right on. Someone's going to draft DJ Burns this year, maybe, from NC State.
Do you think?
Someone might take a chance on him late in the second round and just say, like, he's interesting. He moves the ball, great soft touch. It's like, also, that's Kenneth Lofton. Same guy. So maybe if someone was going to use a second-round pick on him, just bring Kenneth back. Give him a try. I think you can still sign him to another. I mean, well, I guess he's on a non-guaranteed deal, so you don't need to put him on a two-way, but, you know, he's cheap. He's not going to cost anything.
See, Booner and Locke got in this big argument. No, I mean, just a discussion, really, about where he fits as an NBA 4 or an NBA 5. And Booner's convinced he's a 4. Locke and Coach Lacombe are convinced he's a 5. And initially, I was siding with Coach and David. But I don't know. I was thinking about what Booner was getting at. I wonder if you can't slim him down a little bit, make him more laterally quick, and all of a sudden he's a really effective wing-type player.
Yeah, I mean,
like, does he have to be a fat guy big? I don't.
No,
does
not
he
at all.
Have to be that? You know what I mean? Because
no,
I think DJ Burns may have to be that.
Yes, agreed. He's more of a big body
but,
down low.
You know, as we've talked about often, Ben, the NBA is going to the playmaking big, where they can take the ball in the middle of the court
right.
and
pick you apart,
and pick you apart. And if Kenneth Lofton can be that, then maybe he is a big in the league. So, but I don't know. Booner got me thinking about where somebody like that would be the most effective. Like, there's plenty of examples of people are going, okay, that guy's a big, and then they make him into a wing, and it's like, hot dang. There were two right in a row from the Mountain West Conference. Danny Granger, who went to the Pacers, who was a big at New Mexico, and Kawhi Leonard, who was a big at San Diego State, who goes to the Spurs, obviously, and totally remakes his game.
No, it's funny you say that, because I actually think I could see Kenneth Lofton playing, like, to use basketball, and go 4-3, like power forward, small forward, not just center power forward. Like, I think you could put him out there in some lineups that have both Lowry, Markkanen, and John Collins on the floor, and you're like, yeah, you know, Lowry and Kenneth are kind of this 3-4 hybrid, and they both can stand on the perimeter.
Yeah, you're thinking offensively, though. Where does he guard? That's the problem. Yeah. That's why he'd have to trim down, because he can't. I mean, can you imagine what Jason Tatum would do to him right now?
Yeah, like, he's not doing that.
There's no way he's laterally quick enough right now to be able to guard.
But you know who his game is like? It's kind of funny, because it's very on the nose. He's actually a little Kelly Olynyk-y. And now Kelly was a 4-5, you know?
Right.
But, okay, fine. Like, you played a bunch of zone defense with Kelly Olynyk, and you hit him, and that was fine. It worked. You could probably do that with Kenneth.
So they'd have to decide what his position is going to be.
Yeah.
And is, like, a playmaking center even worth investing in if you're only going to play him for 15 minutes a night?
Yeah.
Because I don't think anybody sees his ceiling at the moment as starting big in the league, who you run your offense through. That doesn't feel like that's it.
But maybe he's 10 or 12 minutes a night as a change of pace guy who is one of the more unique players.
Do I want that, or do I want a giant Turkish man who can knock your head off?
And maybe you just have both, and you play it position. You play it opportunistically.
Right.
You see what the matchups are.
But yeah, I mean, Ron got me thinking, though. Like, why should he be stuck as a fat guy big? Or if you could work on his body a little bit.
Which, of course, they're going to. You know, like, he's 21. Like, that's the funny thing about him. I know it kind of seems like he's been around for a minute, because he's played for the Grizzlies and played for the 76ers, I think, for a little bit. But, yeah, he's got to grow up. He's got to lose some of that kid weight still.
Yeah,
he's got to get into a man shape.
And they're big into nutrition over there, and you know some of the behind-the-scenes stuff. I mean, they're very serious about...
Chef Ant, I should say, Anthony Zamora, get his hands on him for an entire offseason. Have him live in Salt Lake. Monitor him closely. Yeah.
But they're serious about that. I mean, having the body being in...
And you would hope he is, too.
Yeah,
and by the way, I don't think his body's that far from being a good body. It's not like he's... You know, Bryce Sensabaugh has a lot of young weight on him still. Like, a lot of young weight on him. So he's going to shed 7 pounds, 6 pounds, and will look totally different. Like, I don't think Kenny's 30 pounds off of... I should say Kenneth. That's what he prefers, I guess. He's not 30 pounds off of being an NBA player.
Yeah, I don't know how many, but, you know... If Locke innocently is making multiple fat guy jokes in a broadcast, I don't think that's where he would be his most effective in the league. And I'm not picking on Locke, but like I listen and he's like, "Oh, there's an earthquake in LA today," or whatever. And it's like
it's also very funny to talk to him in person, Kenneth Lofton, and you see him up close, and you're like, "Oh, I see." Other than the fact that he's 6'7",
he's not very tall. That's the issue.
But, like, his body's actually not crazy. Like, you see him in person, you're like, oh, that's what normal people look like. Every other player in the NBA is just the most fit human being on the planet.
Yeah.
They are just 3% body fat and all muscle and long and lean and bizarre looking. Like, their bodies are actually crazy. Kenneth Lofton just has a more normal human body and bigger than most, but very not out of the ordinary when you see him in person. But, yes, when he's playing next to all these other super freak athletes on the NBA, he looks different. But, man, he can play. He's got a ton of game. So, and he really reads the game well. That's what I'm...
Yeah, he's good at basketball, for sure.
He totally gets it. He totally gets what the team is supposed to be doing. He recognizes what opposing defenses are trying to do. He processes the game at a really quick level, maybe faster than anybody on the Jazz. Like, his reads are quicker than anybody else on the team right now, especially late in the season. That's why I would keep him around. I think high IQ, nice kid. Potential, doesn't cost anything. That's exactly where the Jazz should be right now.
Top three stories of the day at KSLSports.com coming up next. So Danny Ainge We're hoping to hear from him at the top of the 11 o'clock hour.
Then I think Will Hardy's going to open Hans and Scotty.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. And I think Lloyd is like physically stringing wire over to the practice facility, so we hope that our connection
some fish line.
Is all right. Has Lloyd made it past, you know, under the freeway yet?
They've already connected.
Wow.
Way ahead of time.
Wow.
Check the mics, so we should be good to go.
So they had Danny go in early to test the mics?
I doubt that. I don't think he needs to be mic check.
Danny Ainge does it?
An hour before. Hey, guys, hey, I'm just here to check the mics.
I'll just wait.
Check one, two. You got it? Everybody got me? All right. Stay tuned. Top three stories of the day at KSLSports.com. Coming up next, Jacob Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Stories of the day. This is the top three stories of the day on KSLSports.com. 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jacob Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Want to remind you to nominate the youth sports volunteer you know for the Hercules Hero of the Week. Submit your nomination at kslsports.com/contest and listen every Thursday afternoon to JJ and Alex for the winner. Help us celebrate the efforts of those volunteers making an impact with the Hercules Hero of the Week, sponsored by Hercules Credit Union. All right. Time for the top three stories of the day, KSLSports.com. Where are we starting today, Sarah?
Number one, the NHL Executive Committee approves the Coyotes' move to Utah.
So this is the first step. It still needs to be voted on by the governors. There's 32 governors, obviously, and they will vote to approve it or pass on it. But I suspect a lot of that is just minutia in the way of it happening. It's just going to happen.
Is hockey calling them governors, too?
They are.
All right. Yeah. I mean, it's going to happen. The governors or whatever want them out of Phoenix too. Look, they're playing in Arizona State's parking lot.
It all comes back to that. What I didn't realize is, yes, they're playing at what they call the Mullet Arena. It's 5,000 seats, and they don't sell out.
Yeah.
Like, what do we do? Yes, of course the NHL and all of its governors or owners were just like, we're not sending our team there anymore. Enough.
Yeah.
And it's 3 more years of this? We've already been doing it for a year? And you want 3 more years of playing at a 5,000-seat stadium that you can't sell out. Our guys are better than that. This is the big leagues, guys. This is not...
It should never have come to this.
Not the AHL. The ECHL. The Maverick Center is a significantly better experience than playing in the NHL at this point.
Yeah.
Okay, no. We're done with that. We're not doing that anymore. Salt Lake, you have an offer. Great. We're going to take Salt Lake's offer. Great. And we're going to get some relocation money, $200 million from Ryan Smith. It's going to be dispersed over the 31 other teams. Fine.
Yeah.
We'll take it. Yeah, Morello, here's $1 billion. You have to pay us back if you get a team. You're not going to get another team, but fine. We'll pretend that pipe dream still exists. But, I mean, look, Wednesday's their last game. Sam Farnsworth is headed down there right now. He's going to cover that last game, and the rumor is they're going to come back after the game and check out the facilities here. We'll see if that happens. But very exciting that this is the breakthrough we've been waiting for a long time, to add a second major four sports franchise to our beautiful state.
And good for Ryan Smith for being aggressive. This is the way that Vegas landed the Golden Knights, is they built that T-Mobile Arena. So you know what? We're going to build it. We don't have a team to put in it, but we're going to build it. And we know you're going to get over your trepidations about gambling eventually, and you're going to be here, and lo and behold, that happened. You know, Ryan put the wheels in motion on this and was opportunistic. Could say, we're going to wait for an expansion. But no, he's like, we're going to come in. We're going to do you a favor. We're going to rescue this franchise, and we're going to give it a good home. And it's smart. I mean, if you want to make a Jazz comparison, it's the way the Jazz should be with their roster. Be opportunistic. You know, when Oklahoma City didn't want to pay James Harden $5 million extra a year for some reason, Houston was opportunistic.
Yeah.
You know, you never know what's going to come. You got to be in a position to pounce. And that's exactly what Salt Lake is doing. And Ryan Smith deserves credit for it. I mean, it seems to me, Ben, and I don't have any inside info on this, but it seems to me that there hasn't been any bickering over dollars and cents, mainly his his and his organization's attitude has been like, whatever, just here, let's do this, let's make it happen. And I think that's what it takes.
Absolutely. And you know what? Credit him. He found a way to get Republicans and Democrats together in our legislature to approve this, and it happened quickly, and our Democratic mayor was on board, and our Republican governor was on board. Like, everybody was on board for this. Everybody got together to bring this to Salt Lake City. He found a way to keep it downtown. He's got the backing of the biggest institute in our state, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We're all for it. He's got the building for it. He's got the money for it. Like, he crossed his T's and dotted his I's. He did the work he had to. And then not only that, he was in Gary Bettman's ear, it sounds like, for the last year and a half.
Yeah, forever.
Every chance he get. Oh, you're going to be playing golf? Well, let me take you to dinner. Let's meet. Let's hang out. Oh, you're going to be in New York? I'm randomly going to be there too. Why? Don't ask. I'm just going to be there wherever you're going to be. Let's have lunch. And he did. And he did all the work that you have to put it in motion to make sure that when that opportunity came, it happened. And you know what he could have said? Gary, $1.2 billion for a hockey franchise is not the right price. It's too much.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That
it's
was
not
my
what
point.
Anyone else is asking.
Yeah. No,
I could have. I'm going to wait for expansion. I'm going to save $400 million. He said, no, I'm not going to balk at the price.
We're
like you said,
it.
We're just going to do it. We're going to make it easy. I think it's going to be good for us. It's going to be good for the community. So good for Ryan Smith. He did it.
And you're right about the bipartisan support, except for the Democrats in the legislature, because there's not enough of them to matter. So.
Yeah, but the mayor was on board. Yes, you're right. They couldn't have blocked it if they tried.
But yeah, the mayor was on board. Sure, I got you. Bipartisan support.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's great for our community. I'm fully on board. I'm excited about it. I'm glad, you know, we have the ability to send Sam down there to cover the game, to give this monstrous story the coverage that it absolutely deserves, because this is whenever the announcement is coming, which I would guess is in...
Could be as soon as tomorrow.
Like days.
Might
not
be Thursday.
Not weeks. Yeah. That will be one of the bigger days in our rich sports history around here. So
top three.
Pretty cool.
Yep.
Man, top three, that'd be an interesting argument, actually. I mean, it'd be close.
But bigger deal now than when the Jazz moved here.
Yeah, but like getting the O2 Olympics, like that was a pretty big day.
And this is permanent, though. Like this is to stay.
Yeah,
the Olympics were awesome.
Right.
And the Olympics were such a fire, like the starting gun, right? Like, didn't that feel like the engine has, we've turned the engine on and it worked? That's what it felt like to me with the Olympics. Now, I was young when this was announced, but it felt like the starting gun that, like, Salt Lake is here.
BYU winning a national championship was probably a pretty big day.
They made that up. They gave it to a team that beat 5 lost Michigan. Let me anger people on the radio.
It's a national championship.
No, it's a huge deal. It's a huge deal. It's a huge deal.
But I hear you. That maybe there's an interesting sports radio topic for the future.
NHL is bigger than BYU's national title. It's bigger than Utah winning the Fiesta Bowl. It's bigger than Utah winning the Sugar Bowl. Yeah, it's bigger than all those.
Final four?
We got breaking news on the BYU head coaching front.
Oh, hit us.
According to Adrian Wojnarowski, Phoenix Suns associate head coach Kevin Young is filing a long-term deal to become the next head coach at BYU. An aggressive push to hire NBA's highest paid assistant lands BYU its top target. That's a huge hire. Kevin Young is the top assistant in the NBA right now. Kevin Young is the number one assistant coach in the NBA right now. He has been interviewing for the Charlotte Hornets job. I think he just interviewed for the Brooklyn Nets job that they just hired. Jordy Fernandez, who I think is the assistant with the Sacramento Kings. This is an absolutely enormous hire for BYU. This is beyond best case scenario for the Cougars. This is a who's who of coaches. This is a real muscle flex from BYU to show that they still have a ton of power. That's very impressive.
Well, they probably had to pony up some dough. So that's probably a good sign.
That is a huge investment.
You know, I always take the we'll see approach, or actually that's not true. I haven't always done that, and it's actually burned me multiple times. So I'll go with the we'll see approach, because college and pro coaching are definitely still different, and there are a lot of factors. But as far as credibility goes, I mean, for the reasons that you just laid out there, it seems to me that that's a pretty strong resume to bring in as BYU's next head coach. So I think there's reason for optimism there. In fact, that brings us to number two, Sarah.
Well, yeah, this gives us a bright side to this, but Colin Chandler flipped his commit from BYU to Kentucky.
Dirty pool, Mark!
As expected.
Dirty pool! We'll see what Kevin Young can do to retain the rest of this BYU squad that that should bring some players back if he can scramble a little bit.
I'm stunned, in all honesty. That's a crazy hire. He interviewed for the Jazz job before Will Hardy got it. He's been interviewing for the Raptors job. Like,
well, he interviewed for the BYU job, I think, last time.
He
it was
probably
open.
Did. I think, yeah. And he's LDS, I believe.
And they liked him. That was the kind of buzz about him, was he knocked his interview out of the park and didn't end up getting it, but not a shock. I mean, it's not the first time you or me has heard his name mentioned. This isn't falling out of the blue.
No, but that's you are not getting NBA coaches leaving the NBA when, like, their next job is an NBA head coaching job to go to college. Like, that is crazy. Especially because there's a real belief that Frank Vogel's going to get fired this summer if the Suns don't win. So for him to bail on the NBA to join BYU is a ridiculously good hire from day one. Now, what does he do with the job? Can he recruit? How does he get players, et cetera, et cetera? Those are all very big storylines. But, like, you could not have hit a better grand slam for BYU. Like, he might be a better coach than Mark Pope. He's that good of a coach. Like, he could take the highest level college job right now probably because of his resume in college basketball or in the NBA.
The deal is reportedly worth, and this is interesting because figures usually don't come out of old BYU, but the deal is worth approximately $30 million over 7 years.
Yeah, somebody wanted that number to get out. Somebody at BYU wanted everyone to know that they're here to play.
Matt Norlander, by the way, is the one who threw out those figures from CBSSports.com.
Norlander would know.
So 7 years, $30 million. It's very nice. I mean, you know what? NBA assistants don't make anywhere near that amount of money.
No, he was probably making, he was one of the top assistants in the NBA. He might have been up around $1 million.
A lot of NBA head coaches aren't making that kind of scratch.
So, that's unbelievable. I can't believe that story for BYU.
Well, it's cool BYU go get their guy. I mean, you know, notoriously over the years, they have not spent, but they have never been in a league like this either. I mean, it's pretty easy not to spend when you're sitting in the Mountain West.
I'll be curious what he brings with him. Potentially good news for the University of Utah, because Burgess probably stays at Utah now. Which he's, if you're in the know up at Utah, is kind of the heart and soul behind a lot of what they do. I know he's not the head coach, but he's a lot of the momentum that they've had.
Maybe
he goes.
Be surprised if maybe Burge still ends up at BYU.
He could.
By the way, that's sheer speculation on my part. But I think he had some pretty loud voices that liked him in this whole thing. So maybe they find a way to make that happen. I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah. Honestly, I said he's LDS. I don't know if he is or not.
Kevin Young? He is.
Kevin Young is.
Yes.
Okay.
100%.
Okay.
Yes.
He is. That's shocking. That's just an A-plus hire. That's more than what you could have imagined. That's awesome. Good for BYU. That is, you know, they lost everything. They're going to have to step up and figure out how to bring this back. But yeah, this is an unbelievable hire.
All right, so that's the next head basketball coach at BYU, Kevin Young.
The assistant coach for the Phoenix Suns has interviewed for multiple NBA head coaching jobs to leave the NBA to go to college. Wild. Good for him.
And that's a Woj bomb.
Yep.
Woj doesn't often drop bombs about Brigham Young University. All right, well, it'll be fun to get to know him a little bit better, huh?
42 years old, prime of his career. Yeah, his next step, he's born in Salt Lake. Yeah. His next step was going to be a head coach somewhere. Can't believe BYU got him. That's great.
Well, let's...
Should we get to number three quickly?
I hope he knows how to come in and recruit, because he doesn't have to do that now.
It's a different job, yeah, right. It's a totally different job.
And now he has to sell cars and all the other things that come along with being a college coach these days.
But yep.
NBA credibility is certainly helpful. All right, next.
Number three, Alyssa Pealey goes number 8 overall in the WNBA draft.
Selected to the Minnesota Lynx. There was kind of an established top 7 in this draft. In fact, Chicago traded up to get to number 7 so they could draft Angel Reese, the star from LSU. because they didn't think she was going to fall to eight, because again, that was kind of the top tier. And then it was kind of viewed to open up a little bit, and Alyssa Pelean went number eight. So viewed as like the top of that next tier, and rightfully so. She was awesome. Again, very unique. Undersized, she's only 6 feet tall, but pick and pop, kill you in the post. Not a great rebounder, but not going to lose out on the toughness battle. So excited to see what she can do. Minnesota Lynx have four titles in the last decade. I mean, they are one of the better franchises historically.
Minneapolis, surprisingly muggy in the summertime.
Midwest. Right on the river.
I had, like, I went to a wedding in the up there by old Brainerd, Minnesota. And I made the mistake, Ben, of wearing a blue shirt to the reception.
And you were dark blue in some spots and light blue in others.
Oh, it was so bad. I had to apologize to the bride when I danced with the bride. I had to be like, I'm so sorry. So sorry about all of this.
It's going to ruin everything.
I mean, your pictures are going to look terrible. Like, I'm just, I can't help it. I'm sweating. It's muggy up here.
So good for her. First round pick, though. Be very cool.
No, it's great. Great for that University of Utah women's program. And, you know, wish her nothing but success. Caitlin Clark goes number one.
Brink two from Stanford. Cardoso goes three. And she and Cardoso and Angel Reese are going to be on the same team. They both got drafted by Chicago. A couple of twin towers there to reform it. So I had fun watching the draft. You saw the numbers. Caitlin Clark's jersey sold out within an hour. Every size at Fanatics. So she's already drawing a ton of attention. We will see how she performs. And curious to watch how Alyssa Pelean performs as well. But congratulations to the Ute star. With all due respect to Kim Smith, the best women's basketball player in the state of
Ken Smith was awesome. I will not stand for her slander on this show.
It's not slander to say she's the second best.
Join Hanson. We're not going down this road again. Join Hanson Scotty this Friday at Spa Trouvé in Highland, located at 5455 West, 11000 North. How would we say that in Utah? 110th North?
110th North.
Stop by and say hi. We will be. They will be broadcasting live from noon to 3. Stay tuned. More Jake and Ben next, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love, the teams you can't live without.
You have sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 50 segment brought to you by Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer. Combining beauty and technology on windows and doors since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255. Also want to remind you about Win Ticket Wednesday, your chance to win big every week. This week, coming up tomorrow, Ben, you can win a pair of tickets to go see Blue October at Utah First Credit Union Amphitheater on August 24th. Listen to the KSL Sports Zone all day on Wednesday for your chance to win.
Going to have Danny Ainge coming up in about 10 minutes, but the big breaking news as far as BYU basketball alumnus go. Well, I guess Kevin Young's not a BYU alum like Danny Ainge, but Kevin Young is the new head coach at BYU. You can find the story at kslsports.com. Mitch Harper has a bunch of background information. 42 years old. I first remember hearing about him when he was the head coach of the Utah Flash before the Utah Stars when they were playing out at Point of the Mountain. But he worked for the Iowa Energy behind Nick Nurse. He coached for Monty Williams. He's coached for the 76ers. I mean, he's just been on a lot of – he's behind Vogel right now. Like, whether all those guys are great coaches, I mean, Vogel has a title. Nick Nurse has a title.
Vogel does not have a title.
Vogel has a title.
He has a Mickey Mouse title.
He won the title. He has a championship ring. All
does it have Mickey on it?
He coached LeBron, and Frank Vogel then got to tutor a little bit Kevin Young for a couple of years in Phoenix. So – it's just a crazy resume. Worked for Doc Rivers, the 76ers, which maybe you want to block some of that out.
Forget that.
No, it's unbelievable. I mean, the types of stories you can tell. You can say, yeah, I coached Joel Embiid. Yeah, I coached Kevin Durant. Yeah, when I was coaching Devin Booker. Yeah, that helps. That helps on the recruiting trail. And those are things Kevin Love is going to bring, or Kevin Young, excuse me, is going to bring to BYU. My guess, my conspiracy is he was in line or was hoping to get the Brooklyn Nets job yesterday. They named Jordy Fernandez from the Sacramento Kings, and he switches his commitment to BYU. And I'll be curious, does he start today? Does he coach the rest of the playoffs for the Phoenix Suns? I'm not sure.
I can't believe his contract leaked out.
I can. Someone was flexing. That's a huge flex. What is it? 7 years?
$30 million.
Woof.
Yeah, but BYU's really quiet on that.
Yes,
stuff.
They are. There's a reason they weren't.
Yeah. I wonder if it's, I mean, it came out through NBA sources, right? I wonder if it's his agent, Kevin Young's agent, leaking it.
Yeah, I wonder if the person who's paying him has any links to the NBA.
Huh? No, the Cougars are paying him that money.
Okay. Ryan Smith's paying him that money.
BYU's paying him that money.
Ryan Smith is helping pay him that money.
Well, I'm saying, like, if he signed a contract for with BYU sure. for that, BYU is paying that
yes,
money.
Yes, but where the money is coming from and who would leak that and who would have some NBA connections is pretty interesting. And regardless, it was a flex. That is a flex from BYU. We are paying our coach top-tier dollars, even within the Big 12. That is top-tier coaching money. It's not the highest of the highs. What did Mark Pope get? Five-year 30? Five-year 27?
Something like that.
So, I mean, more. But 7 years 30 is not an insignificant amount of money. That is a big flex from BYU. And the hire is a big flex from BYU.
All right. We're going to have Danny Ainge and his press conference to wrap up the season coming up next. Stay tuned. It's Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Sports coverage in Utah. You're listening to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Get the official debit cards of the Utah Jazz, University of Utah Sports, Real Salt Lake, and more exclusively an America First Credit Union. Ben, as soon as they're ready to roll over there at the practice facility for the Jazz, we will hear from Jazz. What's his official title?
CEO?
Danny Ainge?
Chief Executive Officer.
And we'll get his thoughts on the season that has just passed and the offseason that is now upon us, Ben. So we'll get to that coming up. The big news of the day, BYU has hired Phoenix Suns assistant Kevin Young as their next head basketball coach. 7 years and $30 million, reportedly. So that's a lot of dough.
Unbelievable. What, a little more than $4 million a year? It's a huge investment in BYU basketball. It's the type of investment you need to make if you're going to win in the Big 12. They got a huge name, and it's the type of investment where ideally you could keep him around for a long time. It feels like with the Coyotes coming, I mean, we've had the Jazz for a long time. The Olympics are coming in 2034. At least they're going. It seems like they're going to. No one else is bidding on them. Just feels like we've hit the big time in Utah locally. I mean, it just feels like Utah football has been there. The Jazz have been there. The Olympics are coming. BYU has certainly stepped up to the plate in the Big 12. And now with the NHL on the way, I mean, just this is becoming a major, major sports market, and it's very exciting to be a part of.
And we have some Jazz news. This became official about 10 minutes ago, and there have been reports about this out there for the past couple of days. But here's the press release. The Utah Jazz have hired Avery Bradley as the team's vice president of player development. In this role, his responsibilities will include guiding the collaboration between the locker room, front office, and coaching staff, and evaluating personnel, among other duties. Here's Justin Zanuck's quote, when you get the opportunity to bring in someone with the wealth of expertise and insight that Avery has, it's always an exciting addition. He goes on, he'll bring an important perspective working with our team as well as our coaches and players as we move forward in our ultimate goal of winning an NBA championship.
Knows Danny from his time in Boston, one of the elite defensive players of his era, has been around the Jazz a lot this year. Several times he would just be sitting on the Jazz bench. It was like, is that Avery Bradley? You know, and look, there are guys that are just around. The NBA is like that. It's a small community. Guys come and visit. They know players. They come and hang out. They step in for a practice or two. But Avery Bradley just kind of kept showing up. It's like, oh, well, this guy must be getting a job. And sure enough, kind of a hybrid coaching front office thing. The Jazz can mix and match as they want. Give them a test.
Hey, you can hire a zillion coaches now. You can find roles for people that you think have potential and talent and see how it goes. Good. That's awesome. Good for the Jazz.
Yeah, I agree. And the type of personality and defender that you probably want to impart on Keontae George, some of your young guards.
What, like, are you just going to get out there and yell at everybody?
You know, give you some pointers at the very least on how to handle your career on the court.
Is he pick it up out there guy?
Yeah, probably.
Pick it up out there!
And, you know, I think, I don't know if he has a title. He's got two all-defensive teams. I don't know if he was around on any title teams, but had played a lot. I mean, everyone knows Avery Bradley. Avery Bradley was a long-time NBA high-level role player. The types that championships are built on. So having those types of guys around us is generally a positive.
And a lot of these young guys need to work on their defense. So,
first and foremost, it's probably the thing I would preach the most for the Jazz this offseason.
Oh,
find
man,
some defenders.
The defense was so bad at the end of the year. It was. I mean, the transition defense was just rough.
So,
get back.
Hope to talk to Danny Ainge or hear from Danny Ainge coming up here in just a minute. And he's going to do his end of season press conference. Did we hear from him at all in the season? I can't even remember now. I don't think
officially?
We did. Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think we did either. Maybe around the trade deadline? Did we not hear anything?
Justin, for sure.
Yeah, Justin talked.
We heard from Justin a few times, but I don't think we did.
Yeah, been a while since we've heard from Danny.
And we're standing by, apparently. Are they coming up to the podium there, Sarah? Is it just Danny? Do we know? Okay, just Danny Ainge. CEO for the Utah Jazz and is now postseason comments addressing the media. Can we throw to it? Let's get over to the practice facility.
Danny, good morning. Hey, a lot of people ask, you know, the direction. And can you maybe help us understand what the, if you're looking for guards, you're looking for wings or all the above in this next phase?
Let me ask you, leave the mic with him for a second. What do you think the direction is, Craig? Just give me your thoughts on it.
Obviously, youth is one. Athleticism, it would be another. Length would be one. Defending would be, I think, another high-level need or want. But I only call games, and you get to select the players.
It was a good answer. You answered your own question. I tell my grandchildren that all the time. You can answer that question.
Anything else?
I mean, we want good players. Yeah. We want a team that is better than the 23rd ranked team in the NBA. So, yeah, all of the above.
What are your thoughts on the draft, both just at the top and the overall depth of it?
Yeah, so it's a unique draft. I think it's harder to find, you know, franchise-altering players in this draft than some drafts. I mean, last year you had, like, the top three were pretty well-defined, even by this time. Maybe not the exact order, but some order, the top three. I think this year it's not. I'm not sure who those are. But I do believe that we'll be able to find some good players in this draft.
Draft picks and a lot of cap space. What optionality do you have this offseason?
Yeah, lots of good options. Good question. And that's what we're trying to keep is our flexibility and options open. Our plan is not to come to training camp with six kids under 20 years old. That's not a real good option for anybody. I can't say that won't happen and say that's not like option A or option B. Maybe not option C.
Danny, Jay-Z, when we were talking about to him, you know, a couple weeks ago, said that.
By the way, Jay-Z misses all of you, and he's doing very good. I talked with him this morning. He's going to do his 2,500 steps today, and watch some film, get ready for the draft. So he's doing well.
Good to hear.
But he says hi to all of you, and I miss him as much as you. Too much work.
We were talking to him and you know, said one of his goals is to trade for a significant player, you know, and as part of this rebuild, if not this summer, then next. What kind of star would you be looking for in such a trade? And how do you see that trade landscape kind of panning out over the course of this particular offseason?
You know, this has been talked about a little bit. I mean, quite a bit, actually, I think. I guess the best way to explain that is, you know, like in my experience in Boston when we were there and we had Paul Pierce, and Paul was a terrific player, an all-star player, Hall of Fame player. And, you know, our plan was to we lost 19 games in a row in 2007. And our plan was Kevin Durant. But when the lottery came around, we got knocked back three spots to number five. And our plan changed immediately. And we were able to eventually land Ray Allen and KG, which were never available before that moment in time. But we were there and we were ready. So it took a lot of good fortune. Obviously, it took some bad fortune to go win a championship, because if we'd have drafted KD, which was a top plan, we probably wouldn't have won a championship unless for quite a while as a young player. So, but the bottom line is obviously either of those are very good options. But we didn't have all of those options in front of us. In the NBA, we're trying to find good players, like Jay-Z said. That's our objective. We've been close. We felt like we've been close once in this process that would have changed the dynamic of our team immediately and the direction, and would have been much more clear to your question, what kind of players do you need? Then you have the answer. But that hasn't happened, and we do have assets and we do have flexibility. So we don't want to panic. We don't want to go from the 23rd best team and worst team in the NBA, or 23rd best team in the NBA, to the, you know, 18th best by giving up a bunch of things either. Like, that's not our objective. Our objective is longevity and quality going forward. Good quality. Sorry, I mean good longevity, yeah.
With the number of young players coming into the league now, what age or, you know, when do you guys start tracking these players, these young players coming into the league?
I just got back from the Hoop Summit.
USA, yes.
Yeah, USA versus the world team, the best international players all in one setting in Portland. And there were a few future NBA players there that were 17. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, we track them even younger than that. We have a grassroots group here in the organization that is at high school games all year long, and we'll spend the entire summer at sanctioned high school games, I would say, and that are at all the AAU programs that are sanctioned by the NBA, which is getting more and more.
Anything up there? Any names you want to throw out there?
No, I should stay away from the names of the 17-year-olds. Yeah.
Curious, you've made the midseason trades with veterans, which has taken, you know, a 500 start, 26-26, and ended 5-25. In your mind, why was that the way to go instead of making those trades earlier at the start of the season and then having a better draft pick later?
I think that's a very good question, and I think a lot of people have that. That's been answered a lot, too, and for some reason there seems to be some confusion on that. But if we just had a bunch of young players in the draft, we just had six draft picks, and we had the ability to go trade for a franchise-changing player, we got to change the whole team. Like, we don't want to go get a franchise, but because we have Lauri Markkanen, as an example, as one of our good players, and others, we don't feel like we have to make a wholesale change. Like, we can try to find. Like, the last 2 years, I'm not sure, last year, we knew what our team was. And I think they surprised themselves and surprised us, like how good that team was to start the season. Again, I will say this, though, that records are deceiving, I think. I mean, obviously it always matters, the record at the end of the season, but I think that our objective is to, you know, find a player or two, and we're ready to roll. We're ready to go big game hunting. And that hasn't happened in the last 2 years. But if we start all over, like, then we're 3 years possibly or 4 years from being anywhere. We feel like we're closer than that, and we have a chance. I mean, we're going all in this summer to try to figure out what we can do to get better. When I say all in, that doesn't mean that we're going to throw all our chips in and, like, championship or bust. I'm saying our mindset is that we're doing only to try to win. That's our only objective for the first through till we get to July. And if, you know, if we don't land anything, we don't make any deals, we don't land anything, then our direction could change at that moment and wait till the next time that we can try to build a roster. Does that make sense? Did I answer that? Not really.
So did you want to have a team in place in case you made a move that you could win right then? Is that what you're saying? You want to have the veterans to put around somebody if you acquired somebody, say, in January?
That's the benefit of it. Yeah, like there's another way to do it and just get rid of all of our good players and build, have a Chester full and then try to build it that way. That's a possibility. But, you know, like I said, with the in the Boston scenario I used earlier, going from the beginning of the season and losing – and we're the second worst team in the NBA, and we get the number five pick, which is not going to change our franchise at all. Only the number one and two picks are going to change it, right? So there's no guarantees in this business at all. That's why you can't just have a plan that is like what you're going to get. Like we didn't have a plan. We didn't have a plan when we traded Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett and got Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, you know, the next two drafts. Like, those things have – they work out. And but you put yourself in position to do that. Does that make sense? I mean, but you, to answer your question, yeah. Like, it's – we're not as far. We're a big trade away, right? So we explored that all summer, last summer.
Are you interested in extending Lauri Markkanen, or do you want to let that – play out?
I would just prefer not to talk about that, but I mean, I think it's pretty clear that Lauri Markkanen is a very good player. We love him. Yeah, we'd like to have him around.
Okay. And Will talked about how for the rookies, it was about putting them in uncomfortable situations and watching them grow. I just want to get your take on just how do you think, what was their growth like over the last month and a half, 2 months of the season?
Well, first I will say that, you know, it's not ideal to play your young players with all of your veterans out, because then it puts a lot of undue pressure on them. I mean, so as an example, Keontae, I thought had a very good year. He had some ups and downs, and I kind of liked that he had those ups and downs. I kind of liked the fact that the scouting, the most important person to stop on our entire team the night, many nights the second half of the year was him. So the best defender was guarding him. The team defensive schemes were to stop him. And so he had to face some of that that he probably wouldn't face if Lowry and Colin and JC were all healthy. So it's not ideal. But there's value in that too.
Keontae has talked about his relationship with Avery Bradley a little bit. But can you describe the benefit of having Avery Bradley with you in the front office?
Yeah, so Avery is one of my favorites ever. Avery was not my hire, however. I introduced Avery to Will and to Justin and told Avery, like, you got to prove to them that they need you. And but I'm a big fan of him. I loved him in Boston and my time with him. He's a real pro. I think he has a calm demeanor that he can relate to people very well. There's been other young players on the staff that have told me the same things, or of the players that have told me the same thing about Avery. So we're excited to have Avery here, but I think he can be a mentor to some of them. I'm not sure he knows for sure if he wants to get in the world of coaching or the world of front office, but he'll do a little bit of both. But he does have that calm, quiet way of him that I think he can get through to players. And he also has an intensity on the defensive end that I think can hopefully help our guards better next year.
Danny, I wanted to ask you just in terms, when you communicate with Will about plans both in the immediate and long-term future, what are those communications like between you and he?
Will and...
Yourself.
So Will and Justin talk every day. And I would say Will and I talk every other day. I mean, when they're on the road. I mean, talk every day when they're here. But, there's constant communication with Will about these questions that you're asking. Like, he doesn't have any doubts of what we're doing. he has questions and we talk him through, and like there's no guarantee that everything we're doing is 100% right, but we feel like we have a very good plan and a good group to accomplish our goals.
If you look back at your two builds in Boston, there were kind of unique pieces that just stuck around the whole way. Kendrick Perkins, Marcus Smart, there were lots of turnover, but they held. What were the characteristics of those players that was why you held them the whole time? And are there any players on this group that you've seen have those characteristics?
Yeah, so, you know, those characteristics are just toughness and, you know, that competitive fire that is their strength. Over their skills, that competitive fire is what attracted me. Like Tony Allen was another one. He didn't stick with us, but that's a whole nother story. But, I think that those kind of characteristics. I would say the guy on our team this year that exemplified that the most is Chris Dunn. Chris gave us a defensive presence more than anybody else on the perimeter. And so whether it's a 10th man role or a starter, I don't know the answer to that going forward, but I think that he has a role in the NBA. And we liked what he brought to the table in the same regard.
Kind of piggybacking off of the question about the young guys and their growth this season, and you said it's not ideal for them to be playing not without the veterans. Do you think that maybe their growth is stalled a little bit because they were playing with each other so much, and it's going to be so much different when you actually have the team that's going to go for it, that they're going to be playing a different style of basketball, their roles are going to be completely different?
I think it was better. I mean, like, so especially in Keontae's case, who played most of the year here with the big club, I think he had both. He was able to see both. And he's a smart kid, and he was able to see, wow, that's hard. I'm not sure he understands everything of why it's hard, but like we've been able to talk about that. And I think that he had enough success to have confidence in his future and yet enough to learn and enough bad play that will get him in the gym and put light a fire under him as well. So it's a pretty good combination for him. With Taylor, I thought Taylor pretty much played the same role that he'll play. In the last game, he got more opportunities. They actually ran some offense for him. They did a little bit of that in the G League as well. And he's just young, and he's got more growth to do than Keontae right now. But he's shown signs from, you know, just his defensive length and presence and his character and his desire to become good. And I think that he got a taste. So I don't think it was bad or a waste. I think that he got a taste of the NBA, and I think that he's got a great desire to work really hard this summer and get better.
What do you want to see from the three young guys this summer? And, you know, what are some uncomfortable positions that you guys as an organization can put them in order to kind of expedite growth and development?
Well, we have pretty well, we've organized, plans for them for the whole summer. And so I think they're excited about it, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be a lot of work, but they will play in the summer league, assuming they're healthy and still doing well. But yeah, we plan on them playing in the summer league along with whatever draft picks we have, along with Darius Baisley and Kenny Lofton. The free agents, we're not sure, like Johnny Juzang, but those guys are in our plans, and we'll see what they'll be with us throughout the summer.
Understanding on Keontae, looks like it takes about 5,000 pick and rolls to get good at it. Like on big wings, it takes like 3.5 years so what are the benchmarks that you're looking at with that understanding on a Keontae or a Taylor in their first sample size that you got in what's obviously a much longer process?
Yeah, so I'll talk about Keontae first. I would say Keontae, played small forward last year as a freshman at Baylor. He played point guard for the first time in his life this year. He's a full-time NBA point guard, and like I said, half the games he played this year, he's the focal point of the opposition defense. I think that is a great learning experience, like learning to run pick and rolls. He's like way better now than he was to start the season. I'm still not sure he's a franchise point guard,
but I think he can play point guard. But I think that he can play with another guard playing the point, and he can play off the ball too. Matter of fact, he's probably more comfortable at that at this moment in time. But this experience of learning the point guard position was a big step for him, and it just provides a lot of versatility for our team going forward.
Danny,
did I answer your question?
Yeah, you did. No,
okay.
How about Taylor?
Oh, Taylor. Yeah, so I think Taylor is, like I said, he's just a little further behind than Keontae. And so, yeah, he's doing the same thing. I mean, he's trying to, as you saw, his shooting was getting better and better. He's working a lot on his shooting and his arch of his shot. It's been a little bit flat. But he shot a pretty good percentage, I think, in the last month or so of the season, started knocking down those shots. That's a big step for him, but he's got to get a lot better defensively, handling the ball. We saw in the last game where they actually ran some of Lowry's plays for him, and he made some really nice passes on the move, on the dribble. There's a lot of good signs for Taylor going forward. And same with Bryce. Bryce the same way, I would say, with Taylor. They're in a different way. Bryce has a good feel for the game. He's got a better knack of scoring than Taylor, but his shooting, I think he's a better shooter than his numbers would indicate this year, but he can pass and he can shoot and he can score.
Danny, you know where the team ranks defensively, 30th. It's not great, but how –
I think we were 29th at one time.
Oh, Basketball Reference just told me 30th. So
yeah, 30th now. I think you're right.
Do you think your rotation, your player personnel should be 30th defensively? And I guess, is there a coaching piece to that that you'd like to see improve or change in some way? You know, a defensive coordinator hire or something like that that can make a difference.
It has to be better. I mean, that's horrible. I don't think anybody would dispute that. You guys will get to talk to Will in a little while and let him discuss some of we all know that defensively we're not good enough. Yeah, no question about it. We need to get better personnel and more of an emphasis. I mean, as a coach, it's really hard because we love our coach. And the hard thing is, like, there's so many things that we need to get better at. And you can't just throw every bit of it on there. Like, you got to go in phases, especially with so many of the young guys and without the veteran presence. So there's priorities during the season. Ball movement, spacing, running was more of a priority than the defense. It's, like, hard to emphasize all of it. But, yeah, our personnel wasn't good enough. That's on me.
Danny, when you played, 4 years was the common factor. And young men were more prepared mentally and physically to play. How have you had to adjust now, looking at a multitude of 19-year-olds who become 20 during the season, and as you look at this younger group of draftees that are coming in, how have you changed on your patient level and trying to say, okay, he's NBA ready, he's not, and then formulate a plan? And as you look out into the future on how long your plan will take, if they're not mentally or physically quite ready, because you've seen it all from, you know, your playing days to what Boston was able to do, and now such the youth movement in the NBA, isn't it just a totally different plan that you have to map out?
Yeah, it's more difficult when you're trying to project futures of 18-year-olds. It's just harder. There's no question about it. It's more unpredictable. But I'll tell you a funny story about that. And how the plan, everybody wants, like, this plan, including Ryan. Ryan loves a plan. Like, he's a tech guy. He's got a plan. But I wish basketball were that way. I wish we could just, like, organize it, plan it. We're going to draft this guy in the future. We're going to trade for this guy in the future. But that's not how basketball works. But we draft Kendrick Perkins out of high school. And he weighed, I think, 310 pounds. He'll try to tell you that he had that he got 28 in the 3-minute run, and that he had a 30-inch vertical in the draft workouts. But I think it was 22 3-minute run and 22% body fat. And Kendrick was on this plan where we're just going to develop him. So he had to lose 30 pounds. He had to get stronger. And I remember the first day from my office, I looked down, and he's, like, taking his shirt off in the weight room. He was so proud of himself and how he looked. And he became a big piece of our championship runs. The next year, we had a draft workout with, you guys are familiar with, Al Jefferson. Al Jefferson comes in for his draft workout, and Doc goes, "You're not serious about this guy, are you?" I go, "Yeah, like if he's available, like he's probably our guy." He goes, "You got to be kidding me." So I said, "Hey, he's on the Kendrick plan. You know, like this, with the 19-year-old guys, you got to, like, we got a G League now. We got a whole new strength team. We got so many opportunities for them to grow before they come to have to play with a good Boston team at the time." So anyway, Kendrick, after the first day of training camp, Doc comes into my office and goes, "He's starting. Al Jefferson's our starting big man." And so, like, that wasn't the plan. It wasn't my plan when we drafted him. He's got a lot of things to learn, but that was, I mean, Doc said he's better than our veterans, like, immediately. So that does happen, too. And so you just don't know. And I think that with Keontae, there was some of that this year. Keontae, it wasn't our plan for him to be a starter going into training camp. You guys were in training camp. You saw, like, he was good. He was a good player. He earned the respect of the coaches and his teammates, and, like, he earned that job. It wasn't given to him. And I think that that's just, you know, but you don't draft a 19-year-old rarely. There's some that, you know, LeBron at 19 was pretty good. But most of the time they need time to develop. And so we have ways to develop them, and we don't have to be in a rush.
Danny, I just wanted to get your reaction to something that Lowry said recently in speaking with him. He asked about kind of the process that the team has been going through the last couple of years, and what could possibly be, like, more just, like, waiting for things to get better. And he said, "My job is to get good enough to where they can't lose, and I speed up the process." So I just wanted to get your reaction to that.
I mean, that's a great answer. You know, if you were going to tell me that Lowry was upset, then that would be a great answer, too. Like, good. Let's go do something about it. And but Lowry has been great. Like, his leadership skills are growing. He wants to teach the young guys that they can push themselves even more. I think when you're 19, back to your question, like, a lot of the challenges are at 19 and 20, you don't even really know how much you can do. Like, you don't have any realization of or understanding of what your max is in your work and your preparation. But Lowry's done well with that, and I think his plans are to be around here a lot this summer and spend a lot of time with our young guys and just get them to elevate that work to his level. That would be huge. Him and Colin are fantastic at that. Like, I want every player to work with Colin in their workout because he is a psycho. I mean, his intensity, I see him out there pushing sleds, you know, like up and down the court. No one else is even in the facility. He's out here shooting. It's legendary. You guys all know about the stories of him working at 6:30 in the morning on game days and out here shooting. And he doesn't ever seem tired. And so I think that having those two guys in the organization right now are big with their leadership and their work ethic.
Danny, you've talked a lot about the young players. I want to ask you about Jordan Clarkson and his role moving forward with this franchise. He's stuck around through multiple trade windows when there's been rumors about him. What do you want from a guy like him this summer?
The same thing. You know, we love Gordon's character and leadership. He loves to play basketball. But I think he can be a big help if we improve our team this year, this offseason. Like, Jordan can be, as we've seen here, he's a really good player. He can score off the bench. He knows how to play, and he's been a fantastic player for the Jazz. And we hope that he continues to be.
As far as Summer League is concerned, are the plans to have all three of the rookies there, plus whoever you have incoming, or is there going to be a change there?
So our plan today, again, after all the medicals and everything else come back, but yeah, our plan is to have Walker playing in the Summer League and our three rookies from this past year, and Lofton and Baisley, who are under contract, Jason Preston, all those guys should be involved in our summer league. And then free agency will dictate some others. Like, Johnny Juzang is a free agent, as an example. We like him going forward, but he would be another one if that worked out.
It's a little off topic, but BYU just announced they hired Kevin Young, and he's been in the NBA a long time, and I just wonder what you can tell basketball fans about him.
Oh, wow. That's a really good get for BYU. I tried to hire Kevin about 10 years ago to run our G League organization back in Boston. He was a guy that we interviewed last year for the head coaching job here and was incredibly impressive. And I knew after those interviews that he would be a head coach. I thought a head coach in the NBA anytime soon. I know he was in the Brooklyn chase and in the Charlotte chase as well, and should have been. That's a great, great get for BYU. Unbelievable. That's fantastic. Thanks for sharing that news. That's great. That's awesome. Let's go, Cougs.
Danny, you talked earlier about kind of the general trajectory of the draft, especially at the top, but I kind of wanted to ask, especially around the number 8 slot, what you think about that, and then around the turn of the draft, the 25 to 35 picks that you guys project to have.
Yeah, so, Andy, I'm going to be completely honest and say, I'm not sure. I wish I knew. Now, there are a few to a handful of players that I really like at 8. I have no idea if they'll be there. I'm not there yet. And just having it all the way down to the top 30 players. We were just in a meeting in here. Like, we're trying to figure that out, our order of things. So I'll be in touch. You can check back with me in a week or two. I may have a little more information. Or the combine. Which you go to the combine?
I think so, yeah.
You go to the combine?
Yeah.
Nice.
If you,
we can be in contact then, and we should know a lot more by then.
How much does looking at the rest of the West impact your planning? Because if you look at the West right now, probably the 7 biggest stars in the league, for 7 of the 8 biggest stars in the league for the next decade are probably all sitting in the West right now. Like, does that impact your planning at all, or how you try to project your franchise?
Absolutely. I mean, when I'm sitting there at trade deadline and we're a 23rd ranked team, even though we had a better record than, say, Houston, and we were right in the mix with the Lakers and Golden State at that time, I don't think we're as good as them, as any one of those three teams. When we were 100% healthy, I didn't believe that we were. And but absolutely. I mean, I'm really excited to watch the play-in tournament tonight. Like, are you kidding me? New Orleans and the Lakers and Golden State and Sacramento. I mean, those are, like, really good basketball teams. And they're in a play-in tournament. I don't think the East is that deep and that strong, but the West definitely is. But we do take that into consideration for sure.
Players that's considered.
This
to be,
is good. You guys are participating. I like this. Most of the time, you just sit there.
We participate to ourselves all the time. We fight all the time. But Bowler mentioned players that are NBA ready, and then what I see sometimes is players that are for strictly have a college game. And they're good in college, but it doesn't translate into the NBA. One player that I'm interested in your comments on is Edie from Purdue. What kind of player can he be?
Ooh, that's a really controversial topic there.
Yeah.
We have a lot of discussions internally about Edie, and there's both sides of the fence with him and his future in the NBA. Personally, I'm a fan. I like him. I don't know what that means. I'm not saying, though, do I think he's like a franchise center we can build our whole franchise around. I don't see that yet, but I do see him as an asset to a team. What do you think?
The league is smaller, and what I saw in the championship game, I mean, he just strictly low post.
Are you saying Mark Eaton couldn't play in the game today?
The game was a lot different then.
I know, but I'm saying in the game today. You're saying he can't play in the game today?
He probably was better than Mark right now because Mark didn't have an offensive game.
Mark didn't get in a game. Yeah. At UCLA. I played against Mark the year before he came out in the draft. He didn't even play in the game. He's like a Hall of Fame player over here in Utah's Hall of Fame. Like, what are you talking about? Like, the game has changed, I understand, but I mean, Zach is the college player of the year for 2 years in a row. Yeah, there's like an enormous difference.
Well, there is such thing as guys that in college games
Agreed. The game in college and the game in Europe are completely different than our game. No doubt about it. Completely different. Yeah. But I'm a fan, but there's some people on our staff that aren't. But there, I think he's growing more fans upstairs. The first what?
Well, to be college player of the year.
Oh, no. A lot of college players of the year aren't drafted one. I think Jimmer Fredette was 9. I was college player of the year. I was drafted 31, so.
What do you take away from mid-December to mid-January when the team wins 15 out of 19? Guys are playing. I realize Fontecchio and Olynyk didn't remain with the team. Fontecchio started. Kelly came off the bench. But you beat, say, some of the best teams in the league, lots of playoff teams that are all still playing during that stretch. Do you look at that segment of the season and say, we're close? Do you look at that segment and say, these are keepers? Do you look at that segment? Was it a positive experience for the team?
Yeah, it's a positive experience. I mean, I thought that maybe the best win in 2 years might have been the Oklahoma City win here at home, because they had their players. Their best players were playing, and they played pretty well. It wasn't like they just completely showed up in Utah and wet the bed. It was a good game, and our guys played well, and we fought hard to win that game. But a lot of those wins are deceiving. And regular season that's not my thing. I'm all about playoffs, and we're talking about evaluating players. Like, the college game is different. Well, regular season and playoffs are a lot different too. And that's my job, is to like determine playoff basketball and how good are we in the playoffs, not regular season. And you know, so like any team in the NBA, if there was a G League team in the NBA, they could win 15 games. Someone on the team will average 18 points a game. Someone on the team will get 10 rebounds. Like, I have enough respect for the amount of depth of players there are in the world. But the game changers, the teams that have like 3 guys that are, you know, franchise level players, and you know, in that stretch, you know, we played a lot of games that the best player on the other team didn't show, or the second best player on the team wasn't there, or they were resting to come to Utah. I mean, that's frustrating, because it's not winning and losing is what matters at the end. But it's our job to evaluate who we really are. Are we 7-16, or are we the 15-4? And the most recent always isn't the best indicator of what you are. And that's the hard part of this business. And like David asked the question about like the Western Conference, or Ron, and it does matter. Who's in the West and who we're playing against and who we're evaluating ourselves against matters. And anyway, some people could argue that, like, if we were better or not, but internally we were unanimous that we weren't.
Danny, I'll shut up after this, but I'm just curious. In the last 3 weeks in the broadcast booth, the conversation has been, because the Jazz, just the way that the NBA schedule was, I think it was the second hardest finishing schedule in the NBA after the All-Star break. So we saw a lot of potential playoff-bound teams who are aging, and thus, if we don't get to the next level, this team may implode, may have to go through a rebuild with a lot of high-level talent, aging talent, veterans. How much, if teams are beaten, knocked out tonight, compared to the rest of the 1-8s as the West playoffs begin, how much of their decision-making could or will impact some of your decisions on players that could pop out and be available that are 6 or 7 year vets?
Well, 6 or 7 years, that's different than aging. I don't consider
there's a lot
six
of 14 and 15s
aging.
Out there too.
There's a lot of 14, 15. We're not really interested in dinosaurs. We're interested in like good 6 or 7 years. Those are good players. But I'm not saying that we wouldn't go get some veteran player for a short term fix while we buy us some time, but that's not as likely as possible. But yeah, there's a lot of guys. Some of my favorite players I've ever watched playing are out there on some of those aging teams.
I think a lot of those teams told us that the Jazz would be such a player in the off season in multiple ways, in free agency, obviously the draft, but also using the picks to move or make some decisions?
Yeah, so I think most likely draft and trades is the most likely way to make moves. I mean, you guys see it in the NBA now over the last year or two or three, like free agency is getting less and less. There's less franchise player. I mean, everybody's signing contract extensions. And so there's less players in free agency nowadays. Doesn't mean there aren't good players. Like I said, the depth in basketball is elite right now. There's a lot of players out there that can play. And we see that in our team. Like we bring in guys like Baisley and Lofton, who are two of the top big guys in the G League, and they come in and they belong in the NBA. There's no doubt about it. Johnny Juzang spent the last 2 years in the G League. Like, he belongs in the NBA. They can play a role in the NBA for sure. So that's what we're dealing with. Like, we can get some good young players, and that's what that's why we signed them, is to, like, watch them this summer, watch them in training camp, watch them develop, and maybe you find a guy or two that can really help your team. But the transformative players, you know, are hard to come by, and that's what we're looking to do. We're looking to find one of those. You have any ideas? You can text me any of the ideas. Anybody can text me any of those ideas. I'm open to your opinions.
I wanted to go off Booner's question about Zach Edey and just how you balance older prospects in the draft versus bringing in enough a one-and-done type player. How do you balance the two in terms of evaluating them?
That's a good question. I'm not sure there's just a direct answer. I mean, everybody's unique and different. There's value in players that play for 4 years in college or 3 years in college, or in some cases this year with 5 years in college with all the COVID rules. There's some 23 and 24 year old players, and those players have value. They can come in and play right away in some cases. There's not as much of a development plan. They can come in and start in an NBA game. So I would just say that I would say statistically, the younger guys would pan out better in the draft, and there's a reason why they're one and done. Not always, but and that doesn't mean that we're neglecting the 23, 22, 24-year-old kids in the draft either. They all have a place. And there's great stories for all those scenarios.
Anybody else? Thank you.
Thanks, Danny.
All right, guys. Thank you.
That is Jazz CEO Danny Ainge and his after-season media availability. A lot of stuff there. We got to catch up on break. Stay tuned. It's Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love. The teams you can't live without.
You have sense of urgency.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jacob Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. 50 segment brought to you by Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255, Peach Doors and Windows. We also want to remind you to join Hans and Scotty G. Well, mostly Scotty. He's the headliner. Coming up this Friday at Spa Treve in Highland, 5455 West, 110 North. Stop in and say hi. They'll be broadcasting from noon to 3. Ben, we don't have a ton of time here, but eager for your reaction to that press conference from Danny Ainge.
Again, Danny Ainge is not this mystery that I think he's been painted to be. He will just tell you what's going on, and I think he did. I think he told a lot of truth there. Key takeaways, Keontae George isn't necessarily a franchise point guard. That's a huge statement, because it means they're not going to just pigeonhole him into being a point guard if that's not the best fit, which A, opens up who you could draft or who you could acquire. And there are big point guards that are going to be available, both in the draft and in the offseason. And I also don't think it means the Jazz have to do either this summer. But I think that was my biggest takeaway, is that doesn't necessarily have to be Keontae George's role going forward.
There was so much. We'll get into it all coming up tomorrow. My one observation will be, you know who's angry right now? Walker Kessler.
Is he playing Summer League?
Danny said that he's playing Summer League.
No, he has to. He's just not good enough.
Oh, he could use it for sure, but third-year players, from experience covering third-year players who have to go to Summer League, I don't think I've met one that is real enthused about it.
Yeah, he was hurt his first year, didn't get to play, went to the Olympic qualifiers last year, FIBA, didn't get to play. So it'll be good for him if he's still on the roster.
Hanson, Scotty G are coming up next, hoping to hear from Coach Hardy.
Thanks,
coming
Sarah.
Up in minutes. So stay tuned, 97.5 DKSL Sports Zone.